This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We cannot bring people to court on speculation, but what we know is they did put their hands into the cookie jar in this particular case.
That's Sind Siwi Seboka, spokesperson for South Africa's National Prosecuting Authority, on the evidence behind the country's efforts to bring back two brothers from India to face corruption allegations. Details are coming up. Also, the son of Mali's former president is wanted by Interpol. And Ethiopia's second phase filling of the Grand Renaissance Dam has strained relations with its Nile neighbors. These stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. The Libyan National Dialogue Forum meeting in Geneva failed to reach an agreement on the constitutional basis for holding elections in Libya on December 24th. Khalid El-Masri, president of Libya's High Council of State, said some Libyan sides try to tailor the constitutional basis to fit both Libyan National Army commander Khalifa Haftar and Saif al-Islam Gaddafi, son of the late Muammar Gaddafi, as major contenders for the presidency. Jason Pack, a fellow at the Middle East Institute and founder of Libya Analysis, discussed these developments with VOA senior analyst Mohamed Al-Shinawi.
It's a mini tragedy that the LPDF has not created the constitutional basis, nor did the HOR vote previously to amend the constitution to accommodate the elections, but it's not a surprise. All of these bodies are being asked to vote themselves out of power. As soon as the HOR or the LPDF would make these agreements, they are setting in motion the chain of events that leads to an election that pushes them out of their current position of power. As for Khaled El-Mishri's statement that certain Libyan sides are trying to tailor the constitutional basis to fit their preferred candidates, that's of course true, but it's also true on the other side. Everyone is jockeying to control the process so that either they stay in power or their preferred candidates win.
U.S. Ambassador and Special Envoy to Libya, Richard Norland, has expressed his discontent and disappointment for the failure of the Libyan Dialogue Forum to adopt key decisions concerning Libya's future. He said some of these members claim to be working on behalf of political leaders who have given the United States clear assurances that they support elections on December 24th. Can you explain what he was hinting at?
Yes, Ambassador Norland has made a very good point here. Firstly, it's important to note that the U.S. has been applying a lot of the political pressure to push this process forward, and that the Biden administration has been a key driver, as well as Stephanie Williams before she stepped down, in getting us to this process. But what Norland was hinting at in this statement is that part of joining the Libyan Political Dialogue Forum was each member signing a pledge that they agreed to support elections on the 24th of December. And part of Abdelhamid Dabaiba's taking office was his also pledging that he supported elections and would not be trying to stand in those elections. So some people who promised that they supported the elections are now working behind the scenes to delay or prevent them. And it's great to hear Ambassador Norland making this statement, because it shows that the U.S. is trying to hold people to account and keep them to their word.
Libyan National Army Commander Khalifa Haftar has threatened to carry out another military offensive on the capital, Tripoli, if elections scheduled for December 24th do not take place. Haftar said, "We followed the wishes of our friends and allies, and we will resort to political solution, which is the elections. If we don't reach a solution, our armed forces are ready once again to liberate the capital from militias and criminals." What do you make of that?
Well, Haftar is a genius at political manipulation and media soundbites. This is a very clever soundbite, because Haftar always opposed the elections and the UN process. His April 4, 2019 offensive on Tripoli was scheduled to derail the UN process last time. But of course, now that he's in a weaker position, he embraced elections, but he would also oppose the elections if he could benefit from them or be seen as Libya's savior if the elections fail. So this is a genius move by Haftar. He'll try to take advantage if the elections happen and also present himself as the savior for Libya if they don't happen.
That was Jason Pack, a fellow at the Middle East Institute and founder of Libya Analysis, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi. Ethiopia says it has started the second phase of filling the Grand Renaissance Dam, which has strained relations with its Nile neighbors. Egypt immediately expressed its firm rejection of the unilateral move that was announced yesterday. Today, the French news agency AFP reports that the Arab League has submitted a letter to the UN Security Council and the General Assembly seeking intervention in the matter. Ethiopia Today rejected what it called unwelcome meddling by the Arab League on the massive hydroelectric project. In a letter of his own to the Security Council, Foreign Minister Demeke Mekonnen says the Arab League has a reputation for unfettered and unconditional support to any claim Egypt has presented on the issue of the Nile. Ethiopia insists that talks with Sudan and Egypt over the dam issue proceed under an ongoing process led by the African Union. The global crime fighting agency Interpol has issued red notices for two Indian brothers who South African authorities say perpetrated the biggest corruption scheme in the country's history. Atul and Rajesh Gupta, together with former President Jacob Zuma, allegedly stole billions of dollars from state-owned enterprises in the latter years of Zuma's leadership, which was between 2009 and 2018. Interpol's red notices call on law enforcement agencies worldwide to take the Guptas into custody at the earliest opportunity. Darren Taylor has more.
According to Interpol's website, red notices are issued for fugitives wanted either for prosecution or to serve a sentence. Spokesperson for South Africa's National Prosecuting Authority, or NPA, Sindisiwe Seboka, says its evidence against the Guptas is super strong.
The red notice essentially mean that the international police, if you were, wherever they have footprint across the world, barring one or two countries, Korea and so forth, once they arrive in those particular countries, they can then be arrested. And then South Africa will be notified. And then we're given a time frame of 30 to 60 days, depending on the country, to then bring our extradition application to that country. Where
the Guptas left South Africa in early 2018. Shortly after Cyril Ramaphosa ousted Zuma as leader of the ruling African National Congress. Ramaphosa is now the nation's president. The NPA suspects the Gupta families based themselves in Dubai in the United Arab Emirates and travelled frequently to their home country, India. Seboka says the authority has launched formal requests to both countries to extradite the Guptas and their wives.
You're not blind to the fact that they could be elsewhere in the world or could have moved when they heard that the extradition application had been sought.
She says NPA head advocate Hermion Cronier is also relying on the UN Convention on Corruption as justification to hand over the Guptas.
Great, we have another more direct avenue to request the Gupta brothers to come back into the country. The reason that Advocate Cronier has opted that in the process of this, we go the Interpol route is because people of means can travel in and out of various jurisdictions without even being seen.
Seboka says the first charges to be brought against the Guptas are connected to fraud involving about $2 million. She acknowledges it's a very small amount, considering the many billions of dollars the Guptas are alleged to have stolen. But the NPA has to start somewhere.
What we find, we take to court. As long as it's solid and it will hold, it does not assist us to then go for the billions so written about if we do not have facts to back it up. But with this case, we're so sure about our case that we already concluded investigations. The physical document was handed over to the accused who are in the country to best prepare. We cannot bring people to court on speculation. But what we know is they did put their hands into the cookie jar in this particular case.
When the Guptas were in South Africa, they consistently denied wrongdoing, maintaining they were respectable, law-abiding businessmen. Zuma has so far not been charged with any crime linked to theft from public companies. He is, however, due to stand trial on charges including corruption related to an arms deal dating back to the 1990s. For VOA News, I am Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Interpol has also issued an international arrest warrant for Karim Keita, the son of Mali's former president, Ibrahim Boubacar Keita. According to the French news agency AFP, Karim is accused in the 2016 disappearance of investigative journalist Birama Touré, who worked for the Bamako weekly Le Sphinx. The magazine's director, Adama Drame, says that Touré said before he disappeared that he had been working on a story which would have damaged Karim Keita's reputation. Drame and Touré's family suspect he was abducted, tortured during several months in detention, then killed. Keita has denied any role in Touré's disappearance. In 2019, he filed a defamation action against the magazine's director. For many Malians, Karim Keita personifies what they say was the corruption at the heart of his father's regime. He escaped arrest by the military when they overthrew his father on August 2020, appearing in Ivory Coast a few days later. The attack in Burkina Faso last month that killed 160 civilians was in retaliation for activity by pro-government civilian militias in the area, according to Human Rights Watch. In this report from Ouagadougou, Henry Wilkins profiles a human rights activist who has been campaigning against abuses committed by those militias for years.
In the daytime, Daouda Diallo is a scientist. By night, he's one of Burkina Faso's most prominent human rights campaigners. He runs the Collective Against Impunity and Stigmatization of Communities, a campaigning group set up in the wake of the Yergo massacre, an attack that saw around 200 people killed, mostly from the Fulani ethnic group, in early 2019. In Burkina Faso's conflict with the Islamic State group and Al-Qaeda, the number of civilians killed by security forces has often come close to the numbers killed by the terror groups. Diallo has been deeply affected by this. I'm a very sensitive person. I like to help the widow and the orphan, the vulnerable. I've devoted my time to this, but it's not an easy job, and I go unpaid. I do it for humanitarian reasons. Diallo also points out that one of the government's most controversial policies is a law that allows pre-existing civilian militias, known as Cogluiegos, to be armed and trained by the government. The new force is called the Volunteers for the Defence of the Homeland, or VDPs. When the law was created in 2020, Human Rights Watch said arming poorly trained civilians could lead to abuses. So far, at least 95 people have been killed in 38 incidents of violence against civilians by VDPs, according to data from the Armed Conflict Location and Event Data Project. This man, whose name has been withheld to protect his safety, says he watched as VDPs killed two of his neighbours after accusing them of being terrorists. A man named Issa was sick and decided to go to the market. The VDP shot at him there. Issa ran to his house, where they killed him. Bad things happen. That's why I had to run away. The militias are chasing you. The terrorists are chasing you. Burkina Faso's Ministry of Defence did not respond to an interview request about the incident. One VDP leader, who asked to not be named, said most VDPs simply want to defend their homeland, many having had terrifying encounters with terrorists themselves. The terrorists came and burned my house. They were looking for me, but fortunately I was not around. They also killed some of my neighbours and burned their houses as well. It's because of that I really felt I had to join the VDPs. A leader of the ruling MPP party admits it's possible VDPs commit abuses, but says they're necessary. Within the framework of the fight against terrorism, we're obliged to face the fact that the VDPs make a very big contribution. As widespread protests against insecurity in Burkina Faso have swept the country in recent weeks, President Rochemark Christian Kabore said he'll reform the VDPs as one way of improving security. Diallo says the government should take corrective action quickly. However, the government has yet to say what its action will be. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Ouagadougou, Burkina Faso.
The displacement crisis in northern Mozambique is driving up hunger rates. The UN's World Food Programme, WFP, warns that without urgent funding, one of the world's fastest growing displacement crises risks becoming a hunger emergency as families continue to flee insurgent violence. WFP says the displacement has left at least 730,000 people in Mozambique's northern Cabo Delgado region with no access to their lands and no means of earning a living, along with close to 75,000 children under the age of five suffering from acute malnutrition. The UN agency is urgently appealing for $121 million until the end of 2021 to support 750,000 people. Cameroon officials are accusing rebels from the Central African Republic of crossing the border to steal cattle and abduct villagers for ransom. The officials say Central African Republic rebels are fleeing the country to escape post-election violence. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Officials in Cameroon accuse CAR rebels of entering the country's territory and harassing civilians and others displaced by fighting in the neighboring country. Officials say the rebels then take cattle and food from Cameroonian ranchers and farmers. About 30 civilians were abducted in June with demands for family members to pay ransoms of between $1,000 to $10,000 per person to guarantee their safe return. Authorities say people suspected of collaborating with Cameroonian officials to denounce the rebels who are hiding in villages along the Cameroon border are also abducted and tortured in retaliation. Kildadi Tageke Buka is governor of the Adamawa region of Cameroon that shares a border with the CAR. He visited Mbere, an administrative unit in the Adamawa region, on Monday. He says Cameroon's president, Paul Biya, asked him to make sure that the military is deployed to protect host communities and people displaced by the fighting in the CAR. He spoke by the messaging app WhatsApp from Johong, a commercial town in Mbere.
The Mbere division shares more than 160 kilometers of border with Central Africa. And along this border, rebels encroach our territory, steal cows. We have come to reinforce the forces of law and order, encourage the population to be on alert and to inform the hierarchy of the situation which is going on at this border.
Buka did not say how many government troops have been deployed to stop the CAR rebels. He said the troops seized weapons illegally trafficked into Cameroon by the rebels. Cameroon has not given figures on the number of cattle taken by the rebels. The government says economic activity is at a nosedive in Johong and Gawi, villages with the largest cattle market in Mbere. The markets sell about 100 cows a week, down from at least 1,000 every week last year. Cattle ranchers accuse the rebels of either stealing money and their cows or the fear of being tortured. Buyers say they can no longer stop in border markets with the CAR for fear they will be abducted or their money taken. Umaru Isama is mayor of Johong. He says civilians are held in the bush for several weeks until their families pay ransom to the rebels. He says CAR rebels are escaping heavy fighting with government troops and crossing with weapons into Johong. He says the fighting is increasing the number of displaced persons from the CAR escaping post-election violence. He spoke by the messaging app WhatsApp from Johong. Isama says civilians at Cameroon's border village of Yamba near Johong suffer most from the fighting in neighboring CAR. He says since June 15, 3,000 of the 6,500 people living in Yamba are displaced persons from CAR. He says the host community and displaced persons are again witnessing regular fighting over lodging, water, food, and farmland. Mbere is home to 21,000 people displaced due to the crisis in the CAR. 7,000 of the displaced persons had returned to their country but came back to Cameroon within the past 2 months following renewed fighting between CAR rebels and the country's regular troops. Renewed violence erupted in the CAR after the December 2020 elections, in which austere Archange Touadéra was re-elected president. 7 of the CAR's 14 rebel groups refused to recognize Touadéra's victory and have been fighting to seize power. The CAR says much of the fighting is now in border areas where rebels can cross over to neighboring countries due to porous borders. Cameroon shares a 900-kilometer border with the CAR. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after